And the nurse who works with Dr. Klein, she said that she would pop over to the local hospital to collect sperm specimens from these medical students. And she knew a lot of them as well.
Oh, did she?
Personally.
I'm going to just pop over to, like, where the sexy medical students are and get some samples.
She does take the specimen back in an interesting way because you have to keep it at room temperature, or body temperature, I should say, not room temperature.
Oh, my God. Does she put it between her cleavage?
She does.
Oh, my God! Oh, man, I knew it.
Welcome to The Compendium, an assembly of fascinating and intriguing things. Stories from darker corners of true crime, mind-blowing historical events, and legendary people. We give you just enough information to stand your ground at any social gathering. I'm your host for today, Adam Cox.
And I'm your co-host for today, Kyle Reese.
And in today's compendium, we are exploring an assembly of hidden origins silently woven into the genetic code of a bunch of strangers.
What? What does that even mean?
No idea.
About DNA.
DNA, yes, exactly that.
Just DNA?
Well, yeah, and how it connects a bunch of strangers.
What are we covering today?
We're going to be focusing on a woman named Jacoba Ballard.
Jacoba?
Jacoba.
What a name. You don't get many Jacobas these days, do you?
This is the only Jacoba I know of.
Oh, okay. Give me two. Yeah.
Jacoba's life took a turn when she underwent an at-home DNA test, revealing the existence of 7 half-siblings. Upon connecting with her newfound family and delving into the shared mystery of how they were all related, Jacoba and her siblings were soon horrified to uncover the unsettling truth about what their parents' trusted doctor had done.
What? Hang on, they were all... So they had no idea that they were all brother and sister from, like... Their own father, like her father or her mother. It must be the father. The father's been doing the dirty and he wasn't the what? What?
I think you just rambled. I don't know what.
I think I did. Hang on. I'm so confused.
We're going to explore exactly what this doctor did, why he might have done it, and what the repercussions of those actions were.
Oh my God. I've never heard of this story before and I'm so living for it today.
Cool. Before we get into that, shall we?
Ooh, I never get to say this bit, but it's time for all the latest things.
Let's do it.
So I was scrolling through racist Twitter, and of course, all
X
stuff with...
It's just X.
Oh, it's X now, isn't it?
We should always say it's X, formerly known as Twitter.
No, no. I refuse to give in to this fantasy of Elon Musk. It's Twitter to me.
And when are they going to stop saying that, formerly known as Twitter?
I don't know. It's so dumb. But anyway, so I was scrolling through misogynistic Twitter because recently, and this just made me laugh, and I don't believe any of this, but it just made me laugh. Recently, Iceland had a women's march where the women went on strike, 100,000 women, across the country. Now, remember, this is a country that has a population of like 370,000 people.
I was just thinking, what was the population? That's a third of Iceland.
Yeah, huge amount. So 100,000 women went on strike and it was all about gender equality and gender pay, right? And the entire population, like I said, of Iceland is 370,000 people. So 25% of the population went on strike this day. And some misogynists pulled out some really interesting stats about how the economy performed on that day.
Right, okay. So
the economy didn't come to a stop, as many people believed. And the only memo that they got was that HR departments were getting way less complaints in the 24 hours.
Well, there were less people around to complain. But yeah. Well, they're not all women, surely.
I think that they're insinuating that it's the women.
Wow.
And one CEO said that it was nice to just finally get some shit done.
What? That's awful.
That's what they've been peddling on misogynistic Twitter. Isn't that awful?
That's terrible.
So, yeah, no HR complaints and they got some shit done that day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
No. Oh, and the next thing. So I've got a bit of a bone to pick with some of our American listeners.
Okay.
And I know we have many because a lot of our listeners are American. So I was talking to one of our listeners over the last week. Hi, Audrey from Ohio. Yeah.
Hi, Audrey.
I bet you never thought I'd give you a little shout out there.
Oh,
but
no.
We were having a little chat about one of our more recent episodes that was posted in August, which Audrey only referenced by date, right? I was thinking, oh, she's talking about the Amelia Earhart episode.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this doesn't quite make sense, but okay, maybe I understand her point. And I just responded. And then she responded. And it turned out that, yeah, we both had no idea what we were talking about. Because we were referring to an episode that was released in October, the Jennifer Fairgate one.
Oh, okay.
And guys, she wrote the date, month, day, year. Guys, it's day, month, year. What is that about? Because that makes sense, right? It's smallest to largest, not... Yeah. Month. Yeah. How do you guys not get confused when you're booking concert tickets and tour dates and things like that? I just don't get it.
It is odd. I guess when you see 31 in the middle section, you always go, hang on, what's going on? Oh, it's American date.
Yeah, but then you've got to go through your brain and you've got to work, you've got to do the conversion, and it just doesn't sit right with me. But yeah, so I apologize for the confusion. I apologize for sounding like a complete idiot. So,
Did you have a nice chat about it?
It doesn't matter what we're chatting about. She was just complimenting us on how insightful the episode was and which bits that she really liked. So, yeah, Amelia Earhart was not murdered in a hotel room. And there was not evidence inside the hotel room that might indicate where Amelia Earhart was. So, yeah. But in future, I need to just be a bit more vigilant about how I... understand dates because we have so many American listeners. So
well, thanks, Audrey, for your kind comments. Yeah. And I apologize for Kyle criticizing how you look at dates.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's all my latest things for the week. What have you got for us?
So as we know, we recognize different types of genders now and sexuality. So recently...
You're a gender. Do you know that? Like, there is a gender that's named after Adam.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't remember what it does.
The first... man gender.
I can't remember what it is. I just remember seeing a list of like 300 genders. And at the top of that gender in alphabetical order was like Adam's gender.
That's so egotistical of me and my...
Where was you submitted that? I want a gender.
So this, and obviously I'm not saying that there's only two genders, but this particular woman came out
as... What
are
you saying, Adam?
You'll find out.
Okay, sorry.
This woman recently came out as ecosexual. So I don't know what that meant. Does she just like... I don't know, nature and being environmentally green.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
She gets off on it.
Possibly.
Oh my God. Someone's recycling. And they have like a little bit of a moment.
That's a lot of emotion for recycling. So a woman, yeah, she's opened up about being in a relationship with...
Shut up.
A tree. Oh. She is a 45-year-old. She lives in Vancouver Island, British mm-hmm. Columbia. And she was experiencing feelings of loneliness when she stumbled upon a unique connection with an oak tree.
Okay. Was it a very unusual, interesting, attractive oak tree?
There is a picture in this article, but I don't know if it's the oak tree or if it's just Shutterstock. So I just don't know. Either way, it gives me an idea of perhaps what she was feeling at that time.
It gives you an idea that what a tree is, right?
Yes,
it doesn't tell you about the individual.
But the point is, she's been on...
Please don't say date on trees.
Hang on.
Going through my Tinder matches, swiping left on a couple trees.
No, it all started from lockdown. So she was going on her daily walks in 2020. And it wasn't until the summer of 2021 when she began to have she calls it an erotic experience with this tree.
Okay.
She explains, I was walking a path near the tree 5 days a week for the whole winter, and I noticed a connection with that tree. I would lie against it, and there was a eroticism with something so big and so old holding my back.
Sounds like she's into old people and she's just been misdirected.
You know, an oak tree is pretty old. She was looking to find a person who made her feel such a way, but ultimately she says that she ended up finding it with the tree and she didn't find it with another human being. And the feeling of being tiny and supported by something so solid was she just couldn't resist. And she had this craving, this rush of energy that comes when you meet a new partner, and that's how she compares it.
Wow.
And she says, despite this, and I will say this the last time, erotic energy with the tree, it's not a sexual relationship. It's just this kind of, it's a bit of a misconception, I guess. She thinks that's what you go do with a tree. But it's just this feeling that she has, this desire to be with this tree. And she says she encourages everyone to go out and do it. So, you know, next time you go for a walk, just have a look around. See if you can picture yourself with a nice... I don't know, birch, willow, wherever it might be.
Well, I mean, it's a good job that you are allowed to shoot trespassers on your land. I imagine she's not going to live very long if a farmer comes along and sees her being intimate with the trees. Audrey, get the shotgun!
Well, if I wake up one day and I look out the window and I see someone there just laying against my tree in the backyard, that'd be weird.
I mean, most of our trees are shrubs, so that would be a bit weird. And they'll be in our garden. Yeah. It's not like it's a big field or anything.
We should really lock the gate, just in case.
Oh, Laura from across the road is propped up against one of our bushes again.
So yeah, that's my latest thing.
Great, I love it. Should we get on with the story?
Let's do it.
So tell me about these siblings.
These siblings. Well, as I mentioned, the story starts with Jacoba, and she was born on August 26th, 1980. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've done the date as an American then, just to annoy you.
There you go, Audrey.
And growing up, she always felt a bit different to her family. She was blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and had, or has fair skin. Not had, she has fair skin. But her family had dark hair and olive-coloured skin. Mm-hmm. And she kept asking her mum, Debbie, if she was adopted, probably sort of joking,
sure.
But maybe with a hint of seriousness. And perhaps she just needed some reassurance. Mm-hmm. Her mum would say appearance didn't matter, but Jacoba was adamant, like, if I am adopted, please tell me, I'll be okay with it.
What did her parents think about it? Did they not go, obviously, I don't want to startle Jacoba and go, and obviously they give her reassuring words. It doesn't matter. And then behind the scenes, they're going, she's got a point. What? Why is she so white?
Well, the thing is, the mum does tell her the truth when she's 10. And
So the parents knew.
The parents didn't adopt her, but what they did do is they used a sperm donor so that they could have a baby.
Oh, I see.
So Debbie is her biological mother.
Oh, so it's not a big deal when, I don't know what's going to happen, but it won't be a big deal. It's not like they're finding out that you are not my dad, because they went for a sperm donor anyway. But I guess, carry on.
Carry on.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack. So yes, Debbie, her mother, is her biological mother, and her dad is not her biological dad, but obviously raised her.
What was wrong with the dad?
They weren't able to conceive, so they wanted a family really badly, but they couldn't do it through natural means because Debbie's husband was infertile. So they went to a fertility clinic, and there was a doctor there called Donald Klein, and they were looking to have artificial insemination. So just a year before Jacoba was born, Dr. Klein had started his own clinic, which specialized in infertility mm-hmm. and reproduction, and he would go on to treat thousands of cases in Indianapolis through not just sperm donors, but also laser treatments. So he was like the speciality person you would go to in that area if you had any fertility problems.
Wow, okay. So he's the top guy, right? If your healthcare can cover it, then that's where you want to go.
Yeah, exactly. And being a sperm donor back then, you didn't have perhaps the same level as processing and scrutiny that you do have now. Yes, you still had to be free of diseases or things that would or possibly could be passed on through inheritance.
Okay.
And you couldn't necessarily, I think you could probably specify certain traits you might want in a father, i.e. I want them to look like me or whatever.
So what are you looking for there? So when you say you want someone to kind of like look like me, you're talking about like blonde hair, blue eyes.
I think so. Skin color, things like that, right. Where obviously to try and make the child fit within the family.
And I'm assuming Jacoba's parents have said, can we have someone with olive skin?
When Debbie was in her early 20s, Dr. Klein had found a donor which supposedly looked a lot like Debbie's husband.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know, a tall man. I don't know how you could tell, right? But supposedly that's what he said. And a lot of the
So she's just taking his word for it?
Yeah, there wasn't like a catalogue where you go, oh, this is a finance person, this person lived in Nepal and all that sort of stuff.
So no photographs. It's not like a lineup. No. Like, oh yeah, I want his sperm.
Ew, no. No, because a lot of the donors' sperms would come.
I mean, there are more than one. Do you want me to sit down with you and tell you how it works?
There's millions, I know. a lot of the donors would come from medical students who were working in the hospital very close to the clinic. There's a nurse who works...
Well, like as a way to make money?
I guess so, yeah, on the side as they're putting themselves through health school.
Okay.
And the nurse who works with Dr. Klein, she said that she would pop over to the local hospital to collect specimens from these medical students. And she knew a lot of them as well.
Oh, did she?
Personally. Not like that. I mean, maybe
she
like that.
She knew them personally. I'm going to just pop over to like where the sexy medical students are.
I'll get Dave's sperm.
And get some samples.
She does take the specimen back in an interesting way, because you have to keep it at room temperature, or body temperature, I should say, not room temperature.
Oh my God. Does she put it between her cleavage?
She does.
Oh my God. Oh man, I knew it. So the nurse is back at the hospital with some sperm between her boobs.
Yes, that's how she would keep it warm. And she'd go back to the clinic and then it would be used on a patient. Because the thing is, back then, you couldn't use frozen sperm. It'd have to be fresh sperm. I guess they perhaps didn't have the science to be able to maybe deal with it that way.
Okay.
So hence why they had to keep it at body temperature.
So what's the shelf life of unfrozen sperm?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But she had to get it across quite quickly. I know people personally in life who've had to give a specimen and they can't do it at the hospital. They have to do it at home and then keep it warm and then take it to the hospital to get tested.
Oh, like yeah. Really quickly.
Like that, really. So I think you've got quite a short window, essentially.
It'd be like an episode of 24 where like every minute counts.
It does. So Debbie and her husband agreed to the procedure and were both very happy with the outcome as they got to welcome Jacoba into the world. They became just one of Dr. Klein's success stories. Once Jacoba found out that her biological father was a sperm donor, she naturally has this curiosity about her family history and whether she has any siblings out there, essentially. She wanted to have a bond with a brother or sister, which she didn't get to have naturally, I guess.
Sure.
And all her parents could say to her was that it was a sperm donor and that whilst there could be siblings, a sperm donor was only allowed to have their sperm used up to 3 times. So at most, Jacoba could have maybe 2 siblings.
Sure, okay.
That was it. And the reason for that was because they're in this small area or some town, if there was no cap on this, then you could be bumping into your brothers and sisters all over the place.
Sure. And laws change, right? And the last thing you want to do is for a law to change and then all of a sudden you're responsible for 300 kids as a kind of child support.
Yeah, well, that's that. There's also just, you know, inbreeding and also the health conditions that go along with that.
Yeah, I guess so.
So
yeah.
I think it's trying to do good. And I always thought these kind of things were pretty rare or like never happened. But I always remember that story on Hollyoaks where I think there was a guy. So this Hollyoaks is a teen soap opera in the UK.
Yeah, for teens.
And there was a guy that ended up dating a girl who turned out to be his sister. And
who
I thought,
was that?
How does that happen? I think it was Reese. It was ages ago.
And he was dating his sister. I can't remember that.
I think so. And I see these news stories like pop up most years. And there was one at the end of last year, I think it was, where a man found out that he had married his half-sister. And it isn't always because they share the same sperm donor, but also because I know people have affairs, right? Or they have a relationship that they keep a secret. So this man in this story never knew his father other than that he was a tall son of a bitch. That's what his mum told him. And I think because his dad never really wanted anything to do with him. So that's why he was a bit
of a bitch. Because he's completely excluded from the three of them. The two of them. Yeah, three of them.
So she never shared much about the dad to this guy. And he marries this girl that he meets. But at the same time, sadly, his mum dies from cancer. So when he's clearing out his mum's stuff, he comes across these photos of his mum with this man, which of course turned out to be his wife's dad.
Okay.
And so when they ask the dad, and he admits that he got a girl pregnant in college but couldn't handle it and left her.
Yeah.
He's then left with this thing like, oh God, I've just found the girl of my dreams. I've married her. She's now my half-sibling. Do we stay together? We want to have kids. And that's a real life story.
Yeah, well, what can you do? I mean, surely it's illegal in some states, right?
It's illegal pretty much anywhere to marry your half-sibling with the exception
knowingly of... Knowingly marry.
Yeah, I guess so. Knowingly, yeah.
So, I mean, there probably wouldn't be any charges against these people who accidentally...
I guess so. But if you do find out, do you then have to unmarry?
Or does it? Or is it just automatically annulled?
I don't know. Because the only place I found out that you could get married to your half-sibling is Sweden. And that's with special permission.
Okay, that's a whole different thing to unpack. But that's crazy. Like, and these things happen. People say something really unusual happens when you are growing up with your siblings in the first 6 years of your life, which makes you have an aversion to your siblings and your family members, which helps to stop inbreeding. But this is why so many siblings who don't grow up together, there's a high chance that you will be attracted to that person if you meet them later in life, because we're attracted to people that are genetically similar to us or have similar traits or look very similar to us. And therefore, there's an attraction there. So these people, they meet years later and they have this weird attraction. But because they didn't grow up together, there's a high likelihood that they will fall in love.
Yeah.
And you see it happen sometimes with even like fathers and daughters.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. So this happens. So I can understand the rules why they definitely wanted to put a cap on these sperm donors. Because
oh, yeah, that was the original point, wasn't
it? That was the point before we got sidetracked. Crazy world. So, yeah, back to Jacoba. When she was around 18 or 19, she gets in touch with Dr. Klein to see if he had any information that he could provide on her biological father, a donor number, because she knew that she wasn't going to get a name or anything like that. You know, mm-hmm. there is that sensitivity. But she wanted something that might perhaps lead her to a sibling. She wasn't expecting to find her father.
Sure.
And he was very matter of fact. He said that he wasn't able to provide anything like that. Even if he could, the records had been destroyed. He wished her well, good luck, and that was it.
Okay.
And so Jacoba had to be fine with that, knowing that she may never really find anything out. So she gets on with her life. She leads a pretty normal life. She marries her high school sweetheart. She has two kids. She works as an emergency medical technician. And for her, that's it. She thinks she'll just get on with the rest of her life. But then something comes along, a little thing called 23andMe.
Oh, yeah.
So 23andMe started around 2007, and it became the first company to begin offering this DNA testing through spit to find out your ancestry. And I think it's the same piece of technology that now everyone uses, all these other companies out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was the invention of the year back in 2008. And it was a huge achievement, but it didn't really get widely popular until around 2014 when it started appearing on TV.
Yeah.
And we've done it a while back, and it's pretty fascinating, isn't it? You get this home testing kit, you spit in a tube, you register it online, and then within a couple of weeks, once you've sent it off and it's, they run it through their systems.
Couple of weeks. It took 7 weeks, 8 weeks, 2 months, I think.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, it takes a little while.
It's not as easy as they say it is.
Yeah, well, it gets sent off to America, doesn't it? I think it did.
Yeah, and what is really fun about it, you can actually follow your sample, like, throughout the world. Like, I think it goes to, obviously, London, and then it flies over to the States, and then you see it going to, I think, a couple different sites, and then you see it, like, traveling through the system. It's really cool.
Yeah, and when you get the results back, you find out where your ancestry originates from. So different countries, you find out the likelihood you are to have freckles or things like your
a dislike. A hairy back.
Yeah, or a dislike for coriander or cilantro, whatever you call it. It's interesting the things that it tells you. And it turns out my sister is more Neanderthal than me, which I find funny.
What's the percentage?
I can't remember, but it's quite high in comparison to me. But there we go. And of course, you find out people...
That's not surprising. I've met your sister. Which one are we talking about?
We're not going to go into that now. But of course, you can find people that you are related with. And normally it comes up with you have thousands of distant cousins.
Yes.
And they're like fourth, fifth, sixth cousin, which means you share potentially a great, 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 great grandparent or even beyond that. So
sure. Yeah. Like when I occasionally get like notifications saying, oh, you have a relative that's been identified, and you go into it and they say, oh, you share 0.2% of your DNA.
Exactly. And it's quite rare to actually locate someone who is a second or third cousin, although weirdly, one did come up for me this week, which is on my mum's side. So I'm going to reach out and find out a little bit more about that.
Well, how much percentage DNA did they have?
4 or 5%.
That's quite high, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's someone that's relatively close in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. But essentially, for that to happen, it's pretty rare. It's you don't normally get that kind of relative that comes up. And that's what Jacoba thought. Maybe she would find perhaps a cousin that somehow you might be able to link to a half-sibling once you had a chat with them. And so she wasn't expecting to find necessarily the donor. And she says donor because, you know, her dad in this instance is her dad, regardless of biology and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So when Jacoba gets the results back in 2014 at the age of 35, she remembers that day vividly as the report from 23andMe had connected her DNA not just to one sibling, but to 7 half-siblings.
Wow. So the DNA on that percentage must be really high.
Yeah.
So basically what I'm hearing here is that there was this rule that was in place that whoever the donor was, that they were only allowed to be used 3 times maximum because, of course, to stop inbreeding. Mm-hmm. She was aware of this.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a surprise to her to find out, okay, so she actually has 7 potential siblings, and that's just actually on the website.
That's just on the website.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
And for her, she's quite excited by this because she's like, yes, I've got siblings, but I'm a bit concerned because I'm not expecting this many.
Yeah.
What is going on?
So it hasn't just been used 7 times.
Well, one thing she wants to be certain of is that perhaps there is a chance. Okay, say there's a couple of extra half siblings out there. Mm-hmm. Could these other siblings that she's connected to be the family of the sperm donor?
Oh, okay. Of course. She does know that there are siblings.
Yes. But because they're half siblings, that suggests that they share different parents, right?
Okay, so they have one single denominator in common.
Yes, between them all.
Interesting.
So Jacoba makes contact with her half-siblings, and each weekend they would catch up and look at Ancestry.com to try and determine how they were connected in their family tree. And they even joked at one point, wouldn't it be crazy if the fertility doctor became our dad?
The fertility doctor's their dad!
But they disregarded that, like, nah, what are the chances? Anyway, I'll get back to that.
Shit! Oh, God.
They focused on the paternal matches, and they found that they all match a lady called Sylvia, their second cousin. So they connected with her, and they start asking what surnames were in Sylvia's tree. She gives them a whole list of names, and one of them was Swinford, and they connected the name Swinford to Dr. Donald Klein's mother's maiden name.
Okay.
So Jacoba asks Sylvia, is there a chance that Klein is in your family tree?
Mm-hmm.
And Sylvia goes, oh my gosh, yes, of course. Yeah, that's my grandfather's brother's daughter. She married a Klein.
Well, Calvin Klein or Dr. Klein?
Dr. Klein.
Okay.
She married a guy named Don. He's a doctor. And then just like that, Jacoba's like, her worst fears or things that they maybe suspected were like, okay, it's him, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, it's looking likely. So what happens?
Well, Jacoba and her siblings needed to find out if he's lied, if he is actually the father, because they didn't have any hard evidence at this stage that could link it to him exactly. And Jacoba files a complaint with the local Attorney General's office, who I think are a body that provides legal advice and things like that. And she gets a generic response back. And nobody really gets back to her with any real significant information. And she tries and tries, and she's getting nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So Jacoba thinks the next best thing is to draw attention to this by contacting all the international news outlets. But again, no one really responds to her story. And then she lands on contacting a woman, Angela Gannot, a reporter and news presenter for a local news station called Fox 59. And she gets in touch with her via Facebook. Jacoba gives her a full recount of everything, what's happened, who the siblings, etc. And Angela, she's equally frustrated that Jacoba's not getting answers from anyone. And so she takes on the story. And so she reaches out to Dr. Klein, and he denies being the father, that the sperm donors were all above board, and that's not possible for Jacoba to have more than just a couple of siblings. So he flat out denies it when he's pressured by this reporter.
Yeah. Of course he would do, right?
Exactly. Of course. Someone in his position probably would deny that. She follows up with an offer to say, like, well, why don't you just get your DNA tested? That will clear you from all these allegations and we can put it to bed. This is going to be the best way that you could help. And he was like, nope, not doing that. So Angela takes the story to air, and they cannot use the name for legal reasons at this time, because without a DNA sample, they can't really move forward. But it's a story that's in the news now. And this resulted in one of Jacoba's half-siblings to reach out to Klein's children that were over 18 and say, like, we think your dad might be our dad.
I see.
And so his children take a bit of time, but they eventually agree to meet with Jacoba and the siblings.
And these siblings hadn't done a 23andMe at this point.
No, not at this point. And this was the family of Donald Klein.
So they're going to try and convince them to do that then, I'm assuming.
Yeah, or at least try and get more answers or try and use them to get to Donald, I guess.
Sure.
And now that Donald Klein's children are involved, when they speak with him, he actually admits to them that, yeah, all right, that probably is my sperm. So he admits to his own children.
Shit, what do they say?
He says to his children that his sperm couldn't have been used more than 10 times. 10 times is the maximum amount of times.
I thought those 3 times the max.
I know.
But he's special.
Yeah, he's special.
He's a doctor's sperm.
This is obviously not cool at all. There is now some admission and finding out the truth for Jacoba and her other half-siblings. But back to the news story that was on Fox 59, it captures the attention of a lady named Julie. Her husband thought that his wife, Julie, looked a lot like Jacoba, who was on the news.
Mm-hmm.
Blue eyes, blonde hair, fair skin. And Julie calls her mum, as she knew that her mother had used a fertility doctor whilst trying to get pregnant with her.
Right.
She says to her, should I get a DNA test? And mum's like, well, no, we use your father's sperm. He just helped us.
Oh, inseminated.
Exactly, yeah.
I see.
This doesn't apply to you. Don't worry about it. But the uncanny resemblances really trouble Julie. And so she searches for Jacoba online and reaches out to her to try and get some advice.
Okay.
And Jacoba's like, well, I've got no idea. I can't confirm, but just get a DNA test and then that will tell you everything. So Julie gets a DNA test and she gets the results back.
Yeah.
And one of the people connected to her is Jacoba as a half-sibling.
Really? So that little list of 7 relatives on 23andMe is just growing and growing.
That's right. It keeps adding another one or two every now and then. But this, for Julie, it completely changes her world because she thought her biological dad was her dad.
Yeah.
Her mum thought her biological dad was her dad.
Ooh.
So this changes her life. She's 30 at this point, and she felt like it just washed away all of her identity.
Mm-hmm.
And the dad felt like everything had been taken away from him. What a cruel thing to do.
Wow.
And so with this now discovered, this means there's now at least 9 siblings.
Only one more's allowed.
Exactly. Klein said that there should only be 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jacoba finally gets a meeting with Klein along with some of her other half-siblings, and she describes it as a very weird meeting.
Right.
He was really interested to know their age and careers and try and gauge how successful they all were. That's how it felt to her, at least. And now you could think, perhaps he's just trying to get to know them a little bit, but Jacoba felt like they were being ranked.
Ooh, makes me feel like this is what some Sheldon from Big Bang Theory would do, because he's such a genius. He would like wanting to have a few babies and then just see how much of his genetic material he can pass off onto the next person.
Yeah, well, possibly. I don't know. This, I think it's a bit darker in this instance, because at this meeting, Klein reads a quote from the Bible from Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, I think it is, where it says, God says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctioned you, and I ordained you a prophet to the nations. And this is one of the verses that apparently a lot of people don't like because it brings to attention the control of God. And Jacoba, who is a Christian, this infuriated her as it implied that Dr. Klein was playing God. And so one of Jacoba's siblings asked him at this meeting, why did he do it? And he said that he did it because he felt sorry for the mothers. They were desperate for a child. He was just trying to help them because perhaps they had tried to use their partner's sperm or another donor and that didn't work. And he knew his probably would. And so he did it.
But what about all the sperm donors from the sexy medical students working down the road that Donna was collecting in her breasts?
I'm guessing they got used some of the time, but not all the time.
This is sick.
Yeah. He also added at this point, at this meeting, that there can't be any more than 15 siblings.
So okay, so the number's growing now.
He's changed his story now that they've found a few more. What angers those that were affected by Dr. Klein the most, I think, is that how it made them feel.
Sure.
As I mentioned, when Jacoba was conceived, along with a lot of her siblings, back then, sperm donations had to be fresh, not frozen, which is why you had Klein's nurse carrying specimens over in her bra, or you had husbands or boyfriends bringing a sample from home in pretty quickly. So I think when people realize what he could have been doing in that clinic, it made them feel gross. Because they had to use fresh sperm, he would disappear into a room, come back with it, and then inseminate a woman who's in a very vulnerable position. She's being medically analyzed. She's got a hospital gown on. Her legs are raised in stirrups. And you've got this doctor taking advantage, getting his rocks off next door. How gross is that?
Yeah, it is gross.
And these women are sitting there on this table for 20 minutes as they're thinking positive thoughts and just hoping this time round it works, not knowing actually what is exactly going on.
Sure, God. So the thing is, let's talk about some of the numbers here, because you're thinking, if he's saying that, A, there is potentially 15 out there now, because that's grown, not every insemination is successful. Mm. Let's just assume if you're really lucky and you're really fertile, maybe one out of every 5. So if he's managed to potentially have 15 kids, he's been doing this a lot. Multiply that by 5.
Yeah, one of the mothers actually says because she went to him 15 times before she got pregnant. And I guess she doesn't know if he used his sperm 5 times or someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
But to her, it made her feel like she'd been raped 15 times is what she says.
Sure. And if he was doing it selectively because he felt sorry for individual mothers, then he probably did do that to her 15 times because he had probably selected her out. Like, I'm going to let me help her out.
Yeah.
And she felt like she was raped.
Yeah. And I don't think she means that in the physical sense, but I think it's the impact and how it affected her mentally and how it made her feel sick in her stomach. This mental trauma that she suffered from it is the equivalent. And also, I think the bit that she felt very weird about is that when Klein was doing this in the room next door, he would have had these endorphins released, and that perhaps there was a gratification with what he was doing to these women. Yeah, that's where her mind was going with this. Was there something sexual in this? Klein denied that. He said that this was purely just to help women, and his colleagues had no idea what he was doing. He came across incredibly professional, confident, strict, mind you. You wouldn't want to cross him. But he was very assured and respected in his field. And plus, he was a devout Christian as well.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, when you say he was a devout Christian, as if like, oh, how could they do this? I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, that has the opposite effect on me, unfortunately. I'm really intrigued to see what he looks like. Can I Google him?
Yeah, you can Google him.
Okay, yeah. So that's him. He looks like a tortoise.
Yeah, I mean, he's an old man now. I think he's in his 70s, 80s.
Wow,
like
okay. Ooh, interesting. Yeah, he just looks like just a regular old guy with white hair. Reminds me a bit like Dr. Harold Shipman, if I'm honest.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting point.
I hope he's not as prolific, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, as we were talking about being a Christian and everything, you'd think he'd be like a good person, right?
Yeah.
But he wasn't afraid to threaten news stations, which
oh, really?
Was Fox 59, mm-hmm. and the reporter, Angela, with being sued. He alluded to knowing people in high places he could call upon. And so Klein tried to get the ongoing investigation dropped, and he reached out to Jacoba, and he described it as a real problem for him and that it risked his relationship with his wife after 57 years of marriage.
Well, I mean, he should have done what he'd done, right?
I know, the cheek of him. And you actually, there's a documentary where you hear the phone call of where he's going.
Oh, really?
I think so, unless it's dramatized, but I think it was his voice.
Right.
And you just think, the nerve of you to do that, to say, oh, you're affecting my life. Can you drop this, please?
Yeah.
Jacoba, being a strong woman that she is, she wasn't having any of it. She calmly said, I'm not going to stop what the press is doing, because Jacoba felt she had the right to publicize it, because there could be more siblings out there not knowing, and because more were still getting in touch with her through 23andMe, she felt like it was her duty to let people know.
Yeah, for sure. And it's gonna come out anyway, regardless. Every person that gets onto 23andMe, they're gonna have the same DNA matches. And it's just gonna be one of them that's gonna be like, this is weird.
Yeah, especially as it's growing.
Yeah, exactly. It's gonna come out regardless of whether or not Jacoba has anything to do with it.
Yeah, he's trying to keep it quiet, but how long can you do that
for? Genie's out the bottle, man.
And Klein's comments and stuff just fuels Jacoba further. She's still not getting anywhere with the general attorney office. And Jacoba decides that she's going to do her own research. And I mean, papers on the wall, photos, bits of string, a proper mind map investigation from like blogs, papers he wrote, conferences he went to, where he studied, everything.
She means business.
She does indeed. And Jacoba felt there's more than 15 siblings out there. I know it.
Really?
And this is why Klein wanted to keep it quiet, because he didn't want more people finding out. Jacoba identifies that the majority of her siblings live within a 25-mile radius. So in the grand scheme of things, pretty close. Some actually live within minutes of Klein and probably had bumped into him every now and again, not knowing that's my dad.
Sick.
Yeah. One of the siblings says that they would get a new sibling alert via 23andMe. And they pray, oh, please don't let it be someone I know or dated or anything like that. Because there's stories of these siblings just walking around and actually just going, you look a lot like me.
Oh,
could you be my brother?
Yeah.
Klein eventually agrees to meet Angela, actually, at Fox 59 mm-hmm. in a restaurant. And he intimidates her by making it appear like he has a gun in his pocket. I don't know if he actually did, but he definitely made it appear to her like you should be warned.
Okay.
He tries to convince Angela to drop the story, but Angela's like Jacoba, they felt the truth mattered. And it's after this meeting with the reporter that some really strange things started to happen to the siblings.
Mm-hmm.
This is allegedly, so there's no way to confirm that it is connected to him, but it's very sus. Because Jacoba woke up one morning to find the wheel nuts of her car on the floor next to her car tires. So who would have done that in the middle of the night?
God. A
good Christian man, maybe. Julie, the lady that found out that her father was not her biological father, kept a record of everything she had on Klein on her computer, on a Google Drive.
Yeah.
And one day she discovered that everything in that drive was gone, including every email that she had on Klein was also wiped.
How?
I don't know, but she thinks someone might have got in and deleted that. Don't know how. And then another sibling actually describes having nuisance calls. One from a cemetery that was getting in touch with her about a plot that she wished to be buried in.
Wow.
So that's the scariest one, I think.
Yeah, that's like a dog whistle death threat.
Yeah. And so he wanted those siblings to stop talking. But they were undeterred by this. And Jacoba finds out back in 1963, Donald Klein was involved in an unfortunate accident. He accidentally ran over a little girl when she darted out in front of his car whilst driving.
Mm-hmm.
She really sadly dies. And this has a big impact on him. And people think, maybe, does this lead him to go on to what he does? Because he gets, restored or even deeper faith in God. And so some have tried to make, logic of that reason, because is he trying to make amends for this loss of life by bringing all these extra lives into the world? Now, it's a bit of a stretch, and I think it could be people trying to humanize him in a way to find some rationale for his actions.
Yeah, like, where's this all coming from? Is this coming from a PR team, or is this, who uncovered this information? Was this Jacoba?
Jacoba found out that he was in an accident, yes.
Okay.
And because people think this might have affected his relationship with the church and God, because he was ingrained in the church, he taught marriage counseling, he did Sunday school, he would even encourage his staff at his clinic to pray with him. His office even had things on the wall that said, if you want to get into heaven, you had to be a Christian, which offended people of other faiths, like a colleague of his who was Jewish.
Okay.
And it turns out that the church he was at was governed by this body of 8 men, and there would be baptisms at his house in his swimming pool, which was attended by 50 to 100 people. And Jacoba lands on this lead in particular. She gets an email from the Attorney General's office, and it's looped in with other people in that email. And so what she does is she does some serious internet stalking, because she looks at everyone on that email chain, mm-hmm. and she starts looking at them on Facebook and other social media. And she finds someone with a quitherful email address.
A quitherful?
A quitherful.
I don't know what that is.
It's like quither with full on the end.
Oh, it's you saying the word.
Quitherful.
Quiverful.
Quitherful.
I thought you were saying it's a thing that I've never heard of. That's a whole brand new word.
Yeah. But do you know what quitherful is?
It sounds sexual.
It's not. It's not.
Okay.
Well, no, it shouldn't be. Quitherful is a Christian theological position that sees large families as a blessing from God. It encourages abstaining from all forms of birth control, natural family planning, and sterilization. And at the core is a desire to obey God's commandment as stated in the Bible. And among those commandments is be fruitful and multiply.
Okay.
And so they describe their quiverful movement and their motivation as a missionary effort to raise up as many children as Christians to advance the cause of the Christian religion. And children are a blessing, and we should have our quiver full of them. Make sense now?
No.
Quiverful? A quiver full of children?
You keep saying it. Doesn't make it any clearer to me.
Well, basically, if a man has a lot of children, he'll be sending them out as arrows to the world to be ambassadors for God.
Where has the arrow come from in quiverful?
Because a quiver is where you store your arrows.
You didn't explain that.
I thought you knew what a quiver was.
No.
Oh. Yeah, a quiver is where you store your arrows. And this movement called the quiverful is about sending out these arrows.
Yeah.
Can you see the connection here?
Still very vaguely, but yes. Okay.
But supposedly, these children are raised to actively participate in government, seek political prominence, and integrate with higher society and spread the word of God.
Ooh.
Which you could say is a callback to why he was so interested in his offspring when he met them, because he was asking, well, what do you do? What have you studied? And all these things.
Right, I see.
And also, actually, this last point.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the quotes that the quiverful people really draw upon from the Bible is Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. Before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you. But I think what we're kind of suggesting is he part of this quiverful cult, which is all about getting a lot of children out there to spread the word of God?
Clearly he is. But it would be really funny if they were all on the dole.
Yeah.
All of his kids were on benefits, government handouts. That would have been brilliant.
He didn't do a good job.
Yes. Oh, no. He wouldn't want that to get back to the quiverful head ofs, would he?
Head ofs. No, exactly. There's no proof that he conspired with the Attorney General's office or he's part of this quiverful movement. But I think there's enough evidence there, or at least coincidences, and especially with people's data on their computer going missing, the death threats, there's just a lot of weird things to happen all of a sudden. And with this being discovered, just feels like there's a darker undertone or something in society. Maybe, allegedly. We don't know for sure.
Sounds like you're protecting yourself. Are you worried this one's going to come sue us because of this podcast episode?
Maybe. He's tried it before.
Allegedly.
And so it was up to Angela to press at the Attorney General's office. And finally, she gets hold of someone that can help prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenge is, technically, based on the law at that time, there was nothing in the law to say that what he'd done was a crime.
Oh, really? So it's completely, well, I guess because he's just a donor, right?
Yeah, and there's nothing, there's no wrongdoing as such. There's no sexual violation, despite what people felt. That's not taking
it's
away.
It's the lack of transparency.
Yeah.
And openness.
Because people are trying to get him for sexual assault, battery, fraud. But to convict someone of those crimes, it needed to have been with force and non-consent.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no force, and they were consented to being inseminated.
But they were also under the understanding that it would not be him, right?
Exactly. And I think this is the thing. They're like, I wouldn't have had him as my father. Or
yeah, it looks like a Mr. Turtle.
Or they would like the option. Maybe some would have done, but no one actually asked them. And that's the whole point.
Sure.
But Angela finds out that the Attorney General did manage to speak to Dr. Klein a while back. And in writing, he denied everything to them, that he never used his sperm. And in writing, he also says something to the effect about Jacopa, which could be considered libel. And this is what actually gets him, not because of his crime, but he had lied in writing, and this kind of slight threat to Jacopa is what, like, okay, we can get you charged based on this.
I see. Good.
So a search warrant is put out for his DNA, and he has to give it. And so it gets sent away, and it comes back, and the likelihood that he is Jacopa's father is 99.9997%.
Wow, so this is as high as you can get, right? Because you can never be 100% certain. Wow.
Pretty much.
So it's a dad. It's proved what we've known all along.
He is charged with the obstruction of justice.
How? Why?
Because he lied.
Of course. Okay.
So he is charged with obstruction of justice 20 months after Jacopa first reaches out to Angela on Facebook. So this has been going on for a couple of years.
Yeah.
He pleads guilty, but could never be tried for all the crimes he committed. The court could only consider him on the crime that he was being charged for, obstruction of justice, where he lied in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst he's convicted of a level 6 felony charge, he gets a suspended jail sentence and is fined just $500.
Oh, right. Is that it?
That is it.
That's how much I'd pay for a sperm.
A sperm.
A sperm load. So, actually, gross. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, gonna...
If I was a woman getting inseminated, I would pay £500 for Debbie's boob sperm. And she's keeping warm.
Gross. I think that is a complete piss take because that's no real justice for these siblings and their families, the people that have found out that they've been lied to and the dads and everything like that.
Yeah. Did we ever find out how many siblings they have in the end?
I'm leaving that to the very end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so for Jacopa and her siblings, who continued to get alerts of DNA matches to other half-siblings throughout all of this, they had to settle with this verdict.
What about child support? Could they not sue for child support and make him pay for being their dad?
Because
that's one way they could get him, right? And also get back pay child support.
But I guess because there's probably paperwork which waives any rights to child support.
I guess so.
That's the thing. It's all just the lying and the underhandness and the creepiness of it all. So the last few points I just wanted to cover is that any sperm donor should not have any hereditary illnesses that can be passed on.
Oh, God.
And Klein says that he believed all of his children were healthy because he only sparingly gave his sperm samples.
Oh, no, they were all part turtle.
Part turtle. No, but a lot of them, pretty much all of them actually, have an autoimmune disease, like blood clotting. Some have spent weeks in hospital with digestion and colon issues.
Really?
And it turns out since the 70s, Klein had rheumatoid arthritis. And so if he does have an autoimmune disease, which could affect his offspring, he should never have been allowed to be a sperm donor in the first place. Yet if he knew he had this, he went ahead and did it anyway.
And he's claiming that he didn't know this.
He had rheumatoid arthritis in the 70s, which was before he started his clinic. I think what the report was suggesting is he probably didn't know.
Implying that he did know, yeah.
Another one of his biological daughters finds out what happened to her. When she was watching a US talk show, which had Jacopa on, and some of her other siblings appeared, she instantly recognized those names because of what appeared on her 23andMe results. And so she instantly knew what happened to her. But the thing is, though, like Julie and her family, she thought her dad was her biological dad. And Klein even came to her house to visit, to check in on her and her family when she was born. And there's a photo of Klein picking her up when she's 8 months old. So she's with her biological dad and he came over.
That's really creepy.
And not only did she have to come to terms with all of that, she ended up being a patient of Klein's herself. Now,
oh, for insemination.
He was her fertility doctor and also for gynecological needs, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst No, he didn't father. He didn't father one of her children, but he did examine her.
He examined her. That's his daughter.
Yeah, and he knew that most likely.
That's rank.
Yep. And lastly, the bit that you asked about is how many children. So Jacoba started her journey wanting to find one or two siblings that she could bond with. Well, at the time of this podcast, there are 93 siblings out there.
Shit. 93!
Yeah.
And that's all that we know about.
And counting.
And they're all just popped up from the 23andMe. That's the only avenue that we're collecting siblings through.
As far as I'm aware, yes. Unless there's other DNA tests.
Wow, do we have any other? And they're all in the same area?
Pretty much. A lot of them have blonde hair and blue eyes.
Wow.
There is even a thought, like, was he trying to build like some kind of perfect race?
Oh, God.
But there's all these kind of conspiracy theories that come off the back of this thing.
Yeah.
But I think this guy was gross. And
yeah.
Actually, since kind of news came to light, there's actually been 50 doctors that have been identified to have used their own sperm for artificial inseminations, but Dr. Klein is the most prolific of all of them.
The fact that there is just another one that they know about, that is horrendous. This is a gross abuse of trust. The fact that there's more out there, that just shocks me. How long has he been doing this? Over what period do they think that he's been doing this over?
So he started his clinic in 1979. I think he worked for 30 years, but I think the siblings, they're all around 30 to 40 years old. So they think it's probably in a space of 5 to 10 years he did this.
Okay, and then he gave up. He was like, I got enough kids.
Probably, yeah. I don't know why he gave up, but yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, and in 2018, the mothers and siblings involved in this did manage to get legislation passed successfully in Indiana, making it illegal for any illicit donor inseminations. Which is a result for them, because they finally got some kind of justice in this.
Yeah.
However, from what I understand, there's no federal law, which means it could happen in other states still.
Sure. And there won't be a federal law until something really bad happens. Like when it comes to the federal government, they don't really like to intervene until they absolutely have to.
Mm.
And yeah, like with the skyjacking, when we did the DB Cooper, we found that all those skyjackings were happening throughout the 70s and it wasn't even illegal. They didn't make it illegal till years and years later. So there probably won't be a law.
Yeah, and if a
federal law anyway.
Federal, but more states hopefully will take this on board. But yeah, what a crazy, crazy story. And it just really affects a lot of people's lives.
Wow. It's just gross and murky.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sad it wasn't Calvin Klein. Because that'd be cool to have Calvin Klein as your dad, right? Okay, Dad, can you hook me up with some underwear? Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's run the outro.
And so we come to the end of another episode of The Compendium, an assembly of fascinating and intriguing things. If you found today's episode both fascinating and intriguing, then please subscribe and leave us a review. And don't just stop there. Schedule your episodes to download automatically. Doing this not only ensures you're always in the loop, but also boosts our visibility, helping us to serve you even more captivating tales straight to your ears. You can also follow us on Instagram at The Compendium Podcast or visit our home on the web at thecompendiumpodcast.com. We release new episodes every Tuesday. And so until then, remember, be careful when delving into your DNA, as it can be like peering into a two-way mirror. The image before you might be concealing something unexpected on the other side.
Like Debbie and her boobies.
I don't think her name was Debbie.
Why can't it just be Debbie? I just feel like it's Debbie, like Dirty Debs coming back from the medical student kind of dormitory with her loads.
Ew. Until next week.
See you later.